It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Travelers!
Greetings, travelers! Oh my gosh.
I need to rub this in your face because
I know!
Mark, well, you can kind of rub it in my face too. So for those of you listening, I am holding up the paperback and hardcover versions of The Dark Side of the Smoky Mountains, which is our preliminary review copies of the physical books, which we will now very shortly be having at events because we don't care about the pre-order date. We're getting them in advance. But Mark got to go meet Joe Bob Briggs this weekend, and I didn't get to do that, but I got the books, and I'm not sure who won that, so I can't decide.
I got to talk cryptids with Joe Bob and Darcy, and that was pretty epic. They were a lot of fun. I always recommend if anybody gets a chance to go see them, wherever they're, if they're doing their private show or if they're doing a convention appearance, they are worth the effort. They will, the line will be a little long because they take their time with everybody, but they are so worth it. And Joe Bob and I got into a long discussion about Appalachian hollers and all that. It was hysterical. He has a lot to say, and he knew that we were stretching a little bit of Appalachians from Erie, Appalachia by throwing in Jersey Devil and a couple things. But by the end, he didn't know the Appalachian Trail went all the way to Quebec. So I got to teach him a few things too. So it was.
Oh, that's awesome. I will say this. So travelers, you can go to erietravels.com. The pre-order links are up for the books that you can order in advance of their release date. I will say the they're both physical. You can also get an ebook. Don't get the ebook. It's not that cool. Only because ebooks can't have the pictures and stuff like that that these do. But the hardcover has color pictures. So depending on which one you like. Anyway, they're amazing. They're awesome. And I do want to say you did do, we have a bit of breaking news too.
We do. Breaking news.
So didn't the White House come out and say what those New Jersey drones were or something?
The drones. They finally came out with an official report about the drones. I don't know if it's the full report, but at a press conference, the press secretary, she said that official declassification from the president that the drones were FAA approved. They were a testing device of some sort that they are not allowed to say what it is yet. But it was FAA approved, despite all the people saying it wasn't. And then there were amateur drone people who were getting in on the act, copycats. And so that's where it snowballed after that. But it was not an alien invasion, gang. I'm sorry. And it's exactly what we think. I think when it came out, we said, we think this is us and we think it's testing. And they're just trying to keep a lid on it. And guess what? That's exactly what they were. But at least they've lifted the lid a little bit. They didn't say what it was, but it's a peak there, so we can't go wrong with that.
They did lift it. I am also going to point out that they decided to do this over Jersey, so we can go down our conspiracy theories as to why that was, but not now, because today we have an epic guest joining us, Mark, because you're fanboying yet again. Yep. You want to do the intro.
Well, I will bring him on in just a moment, but I do have to say this gentleman has done the makeup effects on quite a few of my favorite movies. So we're going to talk a little bit of horror films, but this man has moved into an area that we are all familiar with, and we're going to let him describe all that himself. But let's bring on the amazing Barry Anderson. Hey, Barry.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Erica.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Yay.
It's fantastic to have you here because I know Mark was already fanboying over this entire situation. So I'm going to ask the first question to really butt in front of him like I did with the books, because that's my goal. So, Barry, what was your first introduction into horror movies? What made you even go down this path?
Okay, well, you know, it's funny. Mark and I would have been good friends, I think, if we were kids. We would have been hanging out and just having debates over, the scariest movies. But you know what? It's weird that I just had a passion for scary movies and science fiction and so forth. But on the weekends, back in my days, you know, back in 60s and 70s, they played a scary movie every weekend on a Friday night and a Saturday night up in near my hometown in Western New York. And, you know, when I finally was able to stay out up late enough, I would watch Chiller Theater and these things. And I didn't care if it was a Godzilla movie or a Vincent Price film or, Roger Corman, Bring It On. I just loved anything and everything about that. And so I couldn't get enough of it. And there was this whole monster kid thing going on with Famous Monsters and Filmland magazines, creepy and eerie magazines. My mother found my Vampirellas hidden underneath those magazines.
Oh, no.
They were confiscated. I think she may have had a conversation with the general store owner, the guy who owned the general store up this block, as to why he sold those to her son. But anyways, but I just always was interested in that stuff. And, you know, reading those magazines and stuff, I learned that monsters actually were created by artists. And, that's when the idea came into my head that sounded interesting. But I had a lot of weird interests. I mean, I was practicing ventriloquism. The other kids in the neighborhood were talking about football and baseball. And honestly, I would buy cards and try to memorize them just so I could try to have a conversation with them. But really, my interests were much different than most of the kids in the neighborhood. I was building the Aurora monster model kits. And I mean, I just lived in this monster world with the posters and the whole thing. And, I just couldn't get enough of that stuff. And so I never lost that interest. And so I just decided that's what I wanted to do. But coming from a small town in Western New York, where nobody else could relate to a kid like me, pretty much. I mean, I had friends, but, they just, we would, they would be like, okay, scary movies. I'm not sure about that. But, we watched some of them together. But I call them chickens, it was fun. Get the Jiffy Pop out and sit down and watch The Blob, or whatever.
I love that. Okay, so do you remember what your first horror movie was?
Oh, gosh. Well, I remember, I don't know if I can say the first film, but I watched a lot of the classics. And I can remember feeling sorry for the Frankenstein monster and thinking that I could be his friend.
Be best friends with Mark.
Same story.
There were movies that I remember. My mom kind of liked some creepy stuff. So I remember I should have not been watching Psycho. But I remember watching that as a kid. And it was Sweet Charlotte, and some of these kind of creepy films that were beyond my, age range, I'm sure. But they did kind of stick to me, though. I mean, where you're like, it's just weird, kind of creepy movies. But yeah, I don't know. I love the classics. And then I started watching the Hammer horror movies. And I had an aunt who would take me to the movie theater and let me watch those movies. Of course, for a young boy to watch those movies and see, I think Christopher Lee as Dracula scared the living daylights out of me. It was so terrifying and in color with these blood red eyes and, big boobied girls, women in the movies. I was like, okay, I was a kid, but I still enjoyed watching those movies. And my parents would have never approved of that, but my aunt would take me to them. So that was great.
We all have to thank our little freewheeling, whatever relative it was, our crazy uncle, our crazy aunt. They always made it for us, but that's man. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start as a monster kid, most of us, and all that. And then somehow, somewhere, you transition into makeup.
What were
your first ones?
Oh, yeah. So, I actually went to commercial art school because it seemed like the most viable way for me to make a living. And I could illustrate, and I was interested in that, but my art teacher really persuaded me to even consider it because I had no plan for a future at all. And I was in my senior year of high school, kind of just trugging along and didn't have any plan. And he pulled me to the side one day, just says, I think you could make a living doing this. And I'm like, how do you do that? And he said, well, there's art schools. And I went home and tried to plug that to my family, and they're like, what do you mean? That's a hobby, right? Kind of thing. But, my parents they knew that I had artistic abilities. And I said, well, what else am I going to do, Dad? Kind of thing. And so I ended up going to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh and studying commercial art, illustration, and so on. But while I was there, I learned about George Romero, and the kids in the neighborhood told me about this zombie movie they made at the mall. And I was like, whoa, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. Who are these people? And then I found out that George Romero is the guy that did The Night of the Living Dead. And then Fangoria magazine had just come out right around that 1979-ish, I think. And I started to read about Tom Savini. And then I found out, he's the guy that's working on all those films. Of course, then Friday the 13th and many other films. So at that point, I really had a desire to try to get into that. But it was by, sometimes I think some incredible synchronicities happen. I was not happy with school. I decided to transfer to Florida, and my mom had moved down there, and I found out that there was an art school down there, and the neighborhood I was living in Pittsburgh was a little rough, and I didn't know if I was going to get mugged on the way home or what. Actually, I ended up getting mugged and put in the hospital, so it was kind of a decision. No, I mean, Pittsburgh's lovely, except for the neighborhood that I moved into.
Travelers get mad at us for saying that.
I'm riding a bus, I lived in a house with a bunch of other art students. It was hell on earth, frankly, but and of course I hadn't lived with my mom in a number of years, but she said, why don't you come down here? And I thought, well, okay, that sounds like a good idea. But when I got down there, I found out about a makeup school in Miami that by chance I walked past a conversation and I heard somebody talking about this film school or a makeup school that teaches film makeup. And that stopped me in my tracks. And I, kind of was like, hey, can I ask you what was that place? And I got in my little Volkswagen Beetle and drove down to Miami and looking in the warehouse section, looking for this place. And I found it. And when I saw a bay door opened up and there's a guy sitting in there sculpting a gorilla head, I jumped out of my car and I was like, holy crap, man, you're doing what I want to do. Who are you? And it turned out to this guy ended up becoming a very good friend, Dean Gates, who became very successful. And he worked on Deep Space Nine and won an Emmy Award for that. But Dean was an instructor there. And he's like, well, okay, yeah, you're at the right place, And I said, seriously, this is what I need to do. This is my calling. And, with a little effort trying to persuade my family to help me and, change things, I dropped out of the others. I was so close to graduating, but I decided to switch over because I wanted to do that. And that's how I got started in the makeup. And, you know, I got along with Dean well, and I just offered to be an assistant. And, yeah, hey, if you need help, I'll help you. And he's like, well, you got to be reliable. You know, you can't mess that up. And so, you know, I was there when he had a gig, and I worked as an assistant with him on a number of commercials and that. And then not long after I got out of school, the opportunity to work on a Romero film came up through Dean, which became sort of a dream come true, since I was obsessed with George Romero and Tom Savini at that time. And this is, we're talking 1984 here. And yeah, that was an incredible thing. But I had been trying to get my foot in the door of the film industry, and I actually got cast on the TV show Miami Vice as an undercover police officer. My mom said, why don't you try to get into acting? So I went out for tryouts for a number of things. I took a little acting course because as a kid, my heroes were voiceover actors from cartoons. And I was interested in that sort of thing and amused my friends with that. So she's like, oh, you like that acting stuff, you know? But, you know, truth is, it wasn't a big goal of mine I never felt really comfortable. And you go to a place for a casting call and there's like 10 guys that look like GQ in the room. And I'm like, you know. But anyways, I got cast on the show, and I worked on that for the whole first season, running around behind Crockett and Tubbs, which was awesome, you know, because I learned all about the film, the TV industry, and what everybody's job was. But when I got a chance to work on a zombie film, that's really what I wanted to do, and I never went back for season two, which I was invited to, but oh well, no regrets, I don't think.
You chose zombies over Don Johnson. Okay.
Yeah, that's what my mom said.
That should be our tagline for this episode. I chose zombies over Don Johnson.
They were all great. They were all nice people and everything. And it was an exciting opportunity. But to be on set with George Romero and Tom Savini and all these amazing, talented effects guys, and have a chance to be a little part of that. It was when they came to Florida. They were filming in a cave up in Pennsylvania outside of Pittsburgh for months. And then they came down to film some scenes, and Dean grabbed a few other folks. I think there were six of us total from Florida that went over and joined Tom and them over in Fort Myers and Sanibel Island. And it was great. So from that point on, I said, this is it. Of course, then I realized this isn't so easy to do, you know, not easy.
Well, okay, so I have a question for you, because I already know Mark knows most of this. So what is one of your top favorite, I'm going to say one of yours so that nobody gets called out, one of your top favorite movies or characters that you worked on?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I wish I could say there was some awesome, you know, because I got so many favorite films out there, and I, you know, really most of the stuff I worked on has been B film projects. But oh God, I don't know. That's a hard thing to say because I'm so critical of everything I do. But let's think.
All our own work critic.
Yeah, I know that is true. You know, I was happy with some of my zombies. You know, I never was a big gore guy, but that's really the stuff that I got hired to do. The most, there was no science fiction shows being made or films none that I had the opportunity to get involved with. So, you know, that I would have loved to have gotten involved in doing some of that sort of thing. But, you know, there were some low budget things where I did a lot of work on them, and that, you know, the stuff was pretty good. But, you know, I just kind of go, well, I wish I could just answer that so easily, but that's a tough one. I have to look around at the wall here. There was that movie. Okay. I know that one of the most disturbing things I ever did, and it ended up in Fangoria magazine. It said, is this the grossest thing we've ever printed? And it was, I think you saw the picture. I sent you a Polaroid of William Russ hanging upside down in a church, completely disemboweled. It was horrific, you know. And even when I was doing it, I'm like, gosh, this is just terrible. But on the other hand, it got into Fangoria magazine. So I was happy about that. But, you know, I would have loved to have gotten into doing some amazing character makeups or something, you know, on a bigger level, but that never really happened. I mean, so I was a spoke in a big wheel on a number of films like Hairspray. I got to get involved with that, but I did not do the Edna makeup on John Travolta, but I did take the body castings and got to do, you know, be involved with the head castings and body castings from him, working with Tony Gardner. That was awesome opportunity, but yeah, I don't know. Gosh,
let me go the other way. What is something that you were asked to do that you were like, seriously?
The worst things?
Yes. I want to know the worst.
Well, actually, when I was younger, I was asked if I would be interested in working, doing special effects on some porno film, which I turned down, but I was like, you want me to do what? You know, like, whoa, no, I'm not going there. So, but, you know, I have been involved in some of the weirdest movies. I mean, one of the early things I got involved with, it was a documentary on schizophrenia called What's Wrong with the Neighbor's Son. And I was living in an apartment with my mom when I got involved with these guys, and I didn't have an effects shop or anything, but I just wanted to work on a film so bad. I was like, yeah, I can do that. And I helped to do a bunch of the guy was hallucinating. So there's all this weird stuff in the film, and they supposedly won awards for this documentary. Well, a few years later they got money and they decided to add more to it and make it into a full feature film out of that, called The Disturbance. And it's one of these, there's some weird write-ups out there about it. Somebody's claimed that Tarantino said he liked this movie, but I highly doubt that. But I looked for that. I searched for that information. I could not find it, but I was surprised that it ended up on DVD was at Best Buy when I was walking through there one day. I was like, what? Oh my gosh. You know, but that was definitely a weird one. And I remember going on the set, and I was dating my wife at the time, and she's like, I'd be interested in going to a film set. I'm like, oh God, it's long hours. Not very interesting. Well, I brought her with me. And the day that I brought her on set, the producers come over and they go, we want you to paint these women's bodies from head to toe in makeup. I'm like, where's that in the script? And I think they were hanging out in a dance joint the night before. So I don't know where this ended up in this film, but my now wife was sitting there watching me paint women's bodies. When we left, she goes, boring, huh? You know, I was like, I knew nothing about this.
Honestly.
I mean, unbelievable. Some of the crazy things that have been, you know, that have happened on sets. I worked on something. I've worked on things where I didn't get a credit for stuff, you know, because people screw up, or maybe it was a good thing. I worked on Mr. Nanny with Hulk Hogan. I know you were involved with the Hulk Hogan film. Now,
yeah, Thunder
yeah.
in Paradise. Oh, yeah. No.
but I got to tell you, one of the things that was so great about it, I mean, the movie's not very good, but I got to work with David Johansen, the lead singer from New York Dolls, and also known as Buster Poindexter. And he, in the film, he plays the bad guy, Thantos, and he has a big metal plate put in his head where, I don't know, I guess the Hulk threw him off of a building and he ended up with this metal plate. I don't know if anybody ever saw this film, but David, yeah, I know. David was a hoot though. And he was nice to me, and he would tell me, he had that gruff voice. You told me all that in the morning to you, kid, you know, I was like, morning, David, are you ready for this? And it's funny. He was very patient with me and everything. But he would talk to me about, he was in a, I think it was a horror movie that he played a part in. Oh, I wish I could think of it. Anyways, it was a trilogy type, one of those Tales of the Dark Side, I believe, movie. Played a part in that. And he was mad that he wanted to get on the front cover of Fangoria or something, you know. Yeah, I know. But we got along pretty well. But one day when I was sitting there doing his makeup, I was gluing this prosthetic, and I had the bottle in front of my face, and I put thinner in it. And I'm doing his makeup, and all of a sudden I started getting high as hell off of this stuff I was breathing. And I was like, I'll be right back, David. And I walked out, and I started staggering around. Like, I was like, oh, my God. I went outside to get some air, you know. I was like, holy crap, I'm going to die here. I come back. He goes, you okay, kid? You don't look so good. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm okay, David. Let's keep going, you know. Things that happen on the set, you know. But that was, just another film where you get your hopes up, and then you see it, and you go, gosh, another film that just wasn't that good. But there were some that I know were going to be bad to begin with. But, you know, you can't control everything. Like the film The Unholy, I mean, it had incredible actors. I mean, yeah. Ned Beatty, Hal Holbrook, Ben Cross. I mean, the list went on. Trevor Howard was in that film. And this is a case where too many cooks in the kitchen and nobody knew what direction they wanted to go. The director was like, I want to make a mysterious thing. And we were hired to do this creature. Now, it wasn't what I didn't have any say in what the creature was going to look like. It was not my position. I was an assistant effects guy on the thing. But we ended up doing what they asked us to do and made this 10-foot tall creature that didn't have a mouth. It was all black and it was going to be in the shadows and kind of thing. I would have preferred to have gotten a stunt woman and put her in this hideous makeup and wire her and have her, you know, turn from this beautiful demoness that seduces priests into this hideous, horrible thing or something. But, you know, it was not my call. But later, after they filmed in Florida, they decided, the producers or, you know, somebody decided to add more stuff to the film and hired some guys out in California to add a whole bunch of other stuff. And instead of this, sometimes less is scarier, yeah. You know, of course, especially when you're dealing with religious demons and you got these serious actors and then they end up throwing these rubbery monsters that are highly lit. And, you know, I was at the movie theater watching this in shock and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this has happened, you know. But it could have been a good movie, but, you know, just didn't. I could tell on set, it's like things are not going, something's weird here. There's too many people, too many cooks in the kitchen here. But again, movie making, it's to get it all right is tough. But they had, you know, a fairly decent, it was a low budget, but it was still, you know, big budget than everything I have been involved with. And, you know, one of the great pleasures of that was Hal Holbrook enjoyed coming in and hanging out with the effects, us, latex covered effects guys. And he comes in with his priest's outfit on and can I hang out with you guys? And we're like, what? Nobody wants to hang out with us. I mean, seriously, they were complaining about the smells and made us end up working in the night shift. And at the studio in Miami, they built this church. It was creepy as all get. And then at night, you're in there just as effects people, breathing fumes and, you know, working the midnight hours. When Hal Holbrook had his chance, he came in and he wanted to talk to us. And he spent time with us talking about his good friend, Dick Smith, who's a hero of mine. And I was a student of Dick Smith. And I actually have a Dick Smith dance, actually. When Dick Smith would call me at home, I would do a Dick Smith dance while I was talking to him. And my wife would be looking at me like, honey, Dick Smith's on the phone. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Dick Smith. And I'd be like on the phone, hi, Dick. And I'd be like, yeah, you're doing the Dick Smith going around. And I was like, and Dick Smith was, I mean, he's such an amazing person. You know, it's so old school that this man would give a person like me the time to call me up and give me critiques about makeups. So I would send him some old age makeups or, you know, whatever. And he would look at them and critique them for me and stuff. So Dick Smith was amazing, and Tal Holbrook was a good friend, and Dick Smith turned him into Abraham Lincoln and helped him with his Mark Twain makeup. And so, you know, sometimes even though the film didn't come out great, the experience and the friendships that come out of those is a great experience and a learning experience, no matter what, even some of the worst films. So, I mean, there's been a few that were maybe torturous to work on, but most of the time they were still fairly fun. And honestly, most of this stuff was done as a sideline because I had to have a job that paid the bills on a regular basis, you know? So when I was in my 20s, I would just quit the job. Like, this job's not that great. I'm just going to say goodbye if I can't take the time off and go work on a film. And then I'm like back at zero, got to go get a job. But later on when you have responsibilities, I couldn't do that. So I had to get pickier or turn a lot of stuff down. But if I could go in on a film and do some particular thing, get involved limited wise or use up vacation time or something, I would do that. And so I had a goal to try to do one film a year, but you know, I kept hoping the films would get better and better, and they just never really were doing that. So eventually I started to switch my career into a bit of a different direction from B horror movies into a little more science-based kind of thing. But, you know.
Well, I saw you did a lot of, you made a lot of bodies and things like that for like Jeepers Creepers. I know that one of our favorites.
Yeah.
We're Florida boys. And so, you know, we were in Florida for a while. So you got to love a monster from Ocala.
So. Yeah. You know, the truck was one of the scariest parts of the movie. I thought that truck was amazing. You know, just
my favorite thing is how did that creature go get a personalized license plate?
Yeah, that's right. I know.
You can do it through the mail, Mark. We've talked about it.
All right. But anyway, sadly, we're going to have to take a quick break.
Okay.
But when we come back, you've now transitioned into your movie retirement, but you've moved into a new field that I think everyone here is going to want to listen for. So travelers, hold on to your butts. We got something cool coming.
It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/Bo_Lake.
Okay, we're back. That's how quick it is. Dun, dun, dun! Magic. People
those
are
commercials
watching this
just
video.
Fly by. Like,
what in the hell is she talking about? Because, so Barry, let's talk preternatural, shall we? You have decided to go down the paranormal path now, right?
Well, I didn't decide it. I lived it for my whole life. So, you know, it wasn't. But what I did decide to do is come forward and actually openly talk about it and do something about it, because for many years, all these things happened and I just put it behind me and just kept moving on in life. You know, you can't let it stop you. But you know, what I should say is that my grandmother was a well-known clairvoyant in Western New York when I was growing up. And she was on television and radio quite often. And I would go with her and sit in the green room while his grandma was doing her thing. And we just knew growing up, we just knew grandma knows stuff. You know, nobody explained to me how grandma knew stuff. She just said, it's a gift from God, you know. I was like, okay, but how do you know the future? I don't get that. How do you know this? You know, but she really was the true thing. She didn't have a neon light in her window or anything like that. She just was incredibly gifted. And, you know, there's times when I think about some of the things that she would say and do, it would just blow your mind, you know. But a lot of times in the family, like, oh, grandma's meddling. And my dad, especially, it was my dad's mother. And, you know, she would be like, he'd be like, mind your own business, mother. Well, she would warn us about dangers and things. And boy, she was right about a lot of that stuff. And, you know, my father would, you know, like my dad and my mom were going on a vacation one year. We struggled. We were a blue collar family and, you know, but they had a chance to go on a trip to Puerto Rico and us children were going to go stay with staying with my great grandmother, poor lady, because we were a handful as kids. But anyway, my dad's at the Buffalo airport and he starts getting paged. Paging William Anderson, emergency phone call. And he's like, what in the world? He's with his boss and his boss's wife and my mother. And he runs to the phone thinking something happened to one of his kids. It's my grandmother. Willie, don't get on that airplane. There's something wrong with the engine. You know, he's just so mad at her. He's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you did this. You know, leave us alone, you know. Well, she was right. There was something wrong with the engine. And they were over the ocean, and the plane dropped altitude, and they were dumping fuel, and they lost. By miracle, they landed in Puerto Rico, and of course, people were screaming and praying and crying the whole time. And of course, once again, my grandmother was right. So, you know, I think that since earliest of age, I had strange paranormal experiences, but nobody talked to me about this stuff. I didn't understand religion. I was, you know, it started at age 4 and 5 where things were happening to me. And, you know, and then my parents, when we tried to talk to our parents about stuff, they didn't want to even discuss it. So, but yeah, it wasn't really a choice per se. And then throughout my life, all these odd things would happen. But, you know, one thing that is validating is many times other people were with me. But I think somehow I'm the man. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how it all works. That's why I'm studying parapsychology right now, trying to figure out how it all works. But I am, I've always had these questions like, why is that stuff happened to me? But, you know, I run into old friends and they're like, oh my God, I remember when we, you know, this happened or that happened. And of course the other night I was talking to my sister and she's like, I just remember we had moved into a house that was haunted. Now the weird part is why was I interested in scary movies when I was living a scary life, you know, at such a young age, you know, my parents bought their first house that they bought. And, it's funny. They brought me there and I looked at the house and the first thing that came out of my mouth was, I don't like this house. And my dad got so mad at me. He just started yelling at me like, I don't appreciate anything, you know? Well, I just got a vibe off of it, I guess. But we moved in and us children were tormented, but my parents would not listen to us, you know? And my sister just yesterday, she says, I just remember laying in a silent scream, afraid to open my eyes because I knew something was standing over me. And exactly how I remember the feeling. We had a boogeyman. There was more than one ghost in this house, but we had this boogeyman. We had a name for him. We called him Mr. Wolf. Of course, it sounds like something from a kid's, you know, movie, but
it works.
You know, that was what we called him. And every night he would come creeping up the stairs. You could hear the creaking going on. You could see a shadow pacing around. Sometimes in the middle of the night, door might slam. But the creepier thing was the boy ghost would play with our toys at night in the closet. And my brother and I would share a room, and you could hear muffled voices, and you could hear the toys, our new toys that we got for Christmas, being played with in our closet. You know, it's funny, my younger brother, before he went to school, my mom heard him playing with his imaginary friend upstairs, you know, and she was like, what's he doing? I overheard her talking to somebody on the telephone because my parents wouldn't discuss anything with us, but she overheard my brother upstairs playing in one of the rooms upstairs. And when she got up there, the door was closed and she was trying to open the door. It was like locked or closed. So the house was built in 1907 or 1906, I think. So this house was old and creepy, and the closet in my bedroom ran from one side of the house to the other side of the house. There was a little window in the middle, but the corners were so dark in there that even during the daytime, very, very creepy place. But my brother is in there talking away to somebody. Eventually the door opens up and he's acting all suspicious because she's like, who are you talking to? And he's just like he wasn't allowed to talk. And as an adult, I asked him about that. He goes, yeah, he wasn't too nice to me sometimes. The dead boy. he didn't like to share his toy. He didn't play nice with me is what he said. So we went through a lot. My sister, she told a teacher that we lived in a haunted house. You know, we had to get up and go to school in the morning. And meanwhile, there's, you know, ghostly apparitions going around in the house and doing things. And the teacher called the school counselor. And then they called our parents. And my sister got into a lot of trouble for this. And I felt bad for her because we felt helpless. Like, we couldn't go to anybody. If our parents aren't going to listen to us, what the heck are we going to do, you know?
We talk about that. It's not just the time period. We talk about that because
a lot of listeners write in
and tell us they're so glad that they get to tell their story, because regardless of what experiences somebody had, they have them. And if you are told, you know, we talked a lot about not imaginary friends, but invisible friends, because I think kids see them. I saw them, you know. I was talking to my brother and sister, my sister-in-law's mom the other day. And she was like, I don't really believe her husband believes. She doesn't believe. And then I said, really? Let me tell you about my invisible friend. And I told her just one story that I shared on the show about the ice cream. And she was like, what? And I'm like, yeah. So you explained to me what that was then. And she was like, yeah, I don't know. I said, none of us do.
Exactly.
That's why we call it preternatural stuff we don't understand yet. Now, where are you studying right now? You said you're working on your parapsychology. Yeah. Where are you studying?
Yeah, I'm studying at the Ryan Education Center, which is part of the Ryan Institute. They are fantastic. And, you know, it's been really very interesting. I really enjoy it. I've been doing this for a few years now since I retired. And I just can't get enough of it. You know, it really has given me quite a bit of information. I know what I'm doing. I'm studying field investigation really at this point. I'm interested in all aspects of the paranormal, you know, ESP. I have had out of the body experiences. I've had precognitive dreams. So I've inherited some stuff from my grandmother, obviously.
It runs in the family.
You know, but I don't have the control like she, you know, my grandmother could meet a total stranger and just start telling them about their past, their present, and things that may come up in the future. And, you know, that she met my wife when we first got married. And my wife said, did you just tell her all that stuff? I went, I've never told her anything, you know. So she really was amazing. Now, for me, it's more random, you know, kind of thing. But as you were saying, when you're young with imaginary friend, in my earliest memory as a, you know, 4 or 5 year old boy, I had an orb that would come at night and it would telepathically communicate with me. And I feel like it took, I never thought I would ever tell these stories, Frank.
We're all here and no one's judging. None of our travelers judge.
It was like bedknobs and broomsticks. I felt like I was would fly out of my room with this being, and I now think it was either a spiritual being or possibly extraterrestrial or both things going on. But it would take me and show me amazing things. I would see things from perspective above my home and above the town, and talk. It would show me incredible visions and teach me things, and left me. I think as a child, I had a lot of concerns. My grandmother looked at me one day, and she goes, "For a child, you have you worry about things way too much, And but I'm like, yeah, because the nuclear bombs are gonna kill us all, Wait, well, 5-year-olds shouldn't be talking about stuff like that. But, and then as life went on, well, we lived in that house that my parents bought for about 6-7 years that we had to deal with this. And we had the creepy basement situation. There was, the creepy basement.
We've all been there.
We had a German Shepherd dog that would sit in front of that basement door and bark and growl at it. And, sometimes in the morning, it was in the door to the basement was in the kitchen. And sometimes in the morning, the door would be open. Nobody would know why the basement door would be open, kind of a thing. And we were all afraid to go in there. It's just one of those, you just know something that is not right in there. And when I was doing my research, I've ended up communicating with three other families, which is, I'm going to be writing a book about. I was going to just make a chapter in the book that I'm writing right now, which I'm almost finished with, but it opened up a can of worms so big that it's like a whole nother thing that I'm still investigating. But the one family said that they've two different people at different times saw a Victorian woman, young woman, in the house that they could see through, and she would fade into the wall or walk through into the wall. And I, after doing the research, I'm pretty sure that she is a Swedish immigrant that moved into that house when it was first built, and her husband, she was a bride, and her husband died from Spanish flu before he ever even went off to Europe. He was training in San Antonio to be sent off, and they shipped his body back, and they had the wake in our living in the living room of the house, and that's where the woman in her fine dress is being seen. Now that could be a haunting. I don't know. But the people say that it looked like she was looking right at them, but it could be residual energy that's there.
Stone tape of some sort. Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that you're getting into this and doing all this. That's fantastic.
Don't forget my theory on cosplay ghosts, Barry. So just remember my cosplay ghost theory.
Ghosts dress up because they, as whoever they expect to see. Right.
Yeah,
so that's why you
see
why the ghost Elvis is everywhere.
I think like a lot of people go, I think this is this person, right? But the fact is whatever these things are can appear to be whatever we want them to be. Like if we really believe souls are universal and they're not, tailored to a person, then there's no such thing as a child ghost.
Yeah.
But there is a ghost that's cosplaying as a child at that point and being a child or whatever, remember that when you're looking, because I think a lot of people make the error of assuming or going, there is an old witch ghost here. And so that every time that's all anybody sees, but that could be a colonial soldier. That's like, this freaks people out more than a colonial soldier. I'm going to be a old weird ghost witch.
True to that. Well, of course, you hear a lot of, if you were something that was maybe on the darker side and you pose as a child, certainly that might make people feel empathetic. As a matter of fact, one of the families that lived in the house, which I don't want to get into too much yet, but they were all sleeping in the living room of the house. They gave the upstairs of the house to the entities that, things got really crazy. There was PK going on. There was, I believe, an attachment situation. And when I was trying to help the family, I went up back home in 2023. And I ended up having, I went and stood outside of the home. And I feel like it knew that I was trying to help these people, because what I was trying to do is get a psychic whom I connected to, who said that they could help to remove an attachment from somebody. And there was like this, it just kept getting blocked, that, and it was everything that could happen to try to block. And the psychic said, I see a very dark brooding, male figure in there, and he will affect every man, family that ever lives in there, and so forth. It got really kind of dark, and I ended up finding out in my research that my imaginary boogeyman was actually a real person, and the name matched who we were calling. And not only that, but I ended up having a freak run-in with his grave when I was home, by incredible odds, that I ended up in front of his gravestone. And it got scary. I got freaked out. I was like, I'm in over my head with this stuff. It got weird, but it's a heck of a story, that's for sure. But many other
out of
things.
That situation, Barry, you would have been like, Erica, we're going, and I would have got there and gone,
an Erica shaped hole in the side of the cemetery wall.
Well, if I run into this, I'm calling.
Let's go get ice cream,
man. I am calling you. I'm calling you. Yeah, I actually was sleeping in my motel room, and I woke up the next day and I had big welted scratch all over on my abdomen, and I was like, "What in the heck is going on here?" And that was right after I met with the family that I was trying to help. So, yeah, it's crazy. So that's just one incident, one story, But throughout the years, I've had haunted vacation situations. Of course, just so many crazy experiences, and my wife and I, the first home that we purchased. At the closing of the house, the old lady selling us the house said, oh, by the way, I was signing like the last paper. Said, oh, by the way, if you see a ghost, it's my mother-in-law and her name's Ivy. And we were like, the realtors on both sides were like, their jaws were dropped. You could hear a pin drop. And yet I went and signed the papers because, we were looking for months to find a home. We didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have a wide range of choices. And I don't know, stupid me. I signed, my wife has, she's an empath. I think she went in that house and goes, I don't know, there's something about it that I'm like, what are you talking about? It's because I was worried about structural things. Like, we couldn't afford to have an apartment, put a down payment on the house. We couldn't pay a mortgage and apartment, and have months of work to renovate something. We needed to be able to go and move in fairly quick. But I said, oh, that lady is probably crazy. Well, as soon as we moved in, things started to happen, little things. And I tried to, I first said, I didn't want to let my wife, I was like, oh, I don't want her to be scared, but she was more of a skeptic than me, but it was things that I had a hard time explaining. Like, I would go and get a level and be like, how is it that bottle's falling off of this shelf? And is it wet up here? And, shampoo bottle drop into the bathtub at night more than once. Just, I'm like, that's flat up there. It's dry up. There's no reason, but it would happen. And, he's just trying to make excuses. Well, one night we were in bed sleeping, and we woke up to this loud crashing and banging over our heads in the attic. Well, the attic was a tiny little crawl space. So I assumed that we had to have some, like a raccoon or something up there, something, some big animals up there banging around up there. And, scared the living daylights out of me. It was loud. And we were like, what is going on? The next day, had to stick my head up into the little trap door hole there with a flashlight, thinking a rabid raccoon is going to attack me or something. Yep. But, I had looked around on the outside of the house. I'm like, I can't see any way anything would have gotten in here, But I carefully looked up there, and I was like, no, there's nothing up here that I see. And so I thought it was weird. But I think at that point, because it was so disturbing, I think we called the trapper in to check things out. And he went there and he's like, I don't see anything, but he left a trap there and put bait in it. Cause I'm like, oh my God, no, it was something big. It was making a lot of noise. Well, he eventually came back, took the trap. And then as soon as he takes the traps back, it happens again. And the same guy shows up. He's like, you guys again? We're like, yeah. And it's big. It's making noise. He's like, I don't, but he's like, all right, well, you're paying me, whatever. And the same thing happens, right? Well, more things start escalating, and things were getting really to the point where there was no way to get out of it. I came home from work one day, and the bathroom sink was torn off of the wall. This house was built in the 1940s. It was pretty heavy duty. The bathroom sink was hanging off the wall. I thought somebody maybe broken in the house, but everything was locked up. There's nothing I just couldn't figure out what's happening. But one day I heard my cat, Heidi, talking away. I was on a Saturday. I was working on an illustration out in the little, my side little art room. And my wife was at work, and I hear our cat talking away as if one of us was paying attention to her. She's very vocal when somebody was paying attention to her. And I thought, well, that's weird. What is she doing? I got up and I started walking. The house is tiny, tiny little house in a old neighborhood. I won't mention where, but I look over, and in the little second bedroom, our little guest bedroom, if you will, the cat's sitting on the corner of the bed, looking up into the center of the room, just chatting away. And I walked in and I walked right into this ice cold energy spot. And I was like, oh my God, it's real. This is real. And I went, I'm sorry. I'll leave you two alone. I back up and I walked out of the place, and I was like, oh God, it's real. Yeah, she's here. This place is haunted. I did buy a haunted house. And the old lady was angry, but we were trespassing on her home. And of course, as soon as we got in there, I wanted to paint and put new flooring in. And I was, doing stuff in the house. There were just many things that went on in there. One night we actually saw her apparition. Ooh. Which gave me, I had a sleep disorder. I seriously had a sleep disorder after this for a long time, because it freaked me out so much. But my wife heard our cat again meowing and making noise. She woke up and saw the silhouette of a figure standing in our bedroom door that was backlit by there was a little light in the bathroom that was on the other side of the hall. And she could see enough light to where she saw this silhouette of somebody standing there. And I woke up hearing my wife saying, who are you? What do you want? Who is, and I wake up and I'm looking, and I just see this thing go from the doorway. It starts coming through into the bedroom and sort of just drifts over towards me. It was translucent. There was enough light in the bedroom from the street lights that you could see everything in the room, like moonlight almost kind of lighting. And I see this apparition come floating across the room towards me. And it gets right up by my side of the bed, standing up over me, looking down. And I just, I saw enough detail to where I could see it looks almost like a skeletal looking face with dark sockets in the eyes and the mouth area and stuff. But in a, something in a small stature, like a old woman. And then it, you know, I was just terrified, and then it just disappeared in front of my face. We were in shock, and we didn't even say a single thing. And actually, I think my wife went back to sleep somehow. I don't know how she did that, but I had to go to work. The next morning we got up, we went off to work. We didn't say anything, but when we got back, I'm like, so what happened? She goes, you tell me what happened, you know? And I had told her, I was like, well, you woke me up because there was something in the doorway and it floated. And she went, yeah, that's what I saw. And that, then I was like, oh my God, this is real. This is not, you know, because before that you're like, well, maybe you're trying to make excuses. And yeah, it was not a good situation to be in.
Nope, burn the house down.
Well, that's, you know,
solution. Burn it down.
Well, first of all, it's something that most people don't realize. We're a young couple. Yeah. Privacy, privacy. What is this lady doing? What's she watching? You know, you have no privacy. Like, we're in this little house and there's a third person in there, you know, and hey, you want to get romantic with an old lady watching us? Not really. You know?
Oh, come on. It's an invisible threesome.
Oh no.
Someone just likes to watch. That's all. We don't kink shame here. We don't kink shame.
We don't kink shame ghosts. We're not doing that here on this broadcast. Just kidding.
But it messes psychologically. It really does mess with you, you know. And
it really does.
We had a rule. You couldn't talk about her in the house because we knew she had a temper. And if she could pull a sink off of a wall and crash things around up in the attic, then hello, you know, there's no question that she's capable of doing other things. Eventually, though, things started to calm down. But yeah, it just, you know, it was a very strange experience living in that situation. And I thought, what of all the luck? How has this happened to me all the time? You know, why would this happen? But there you go. Again, another thing that happened.
It's in the blood, man. It's in the blood. You are a paranormal magnet. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
And again, we don't think you're crazy. We understand this is the stuff. We get how many emails a day of people.
I appreciate it because, you know, the problem is I have not, it's so hard. You know, well, now I don't care. I'm old enough to where I'm like, I don't really care what people, you can judge me if you want. But, you know, but when I was younger, I didn't tell any of my friends that I lived in a haunted house. And actually, when I was home in 2023, two of my siblings and I went across the street from our childhood home and met with our childhood friends, who the family still owns the house.
Oh, nice.
And my sister, we were having a great reunion. And my buddy, I haven't seen him in decades. It was awesome. It was like going back to 1973 again or whatever. And my sister goes, well, you know, that house is haunted. And they're like, well, no wonder so many people moving in and out of there. All Jesus, you know, but we're like, no, really, it is. And my sister goes, oh, he brought ghost hunting equipment with him. And they're like, oh, bring it out. Get it. You know? I just brought a REM pod and a Mel meter with me just in case I could get anywhere near that house. But it's rented by somebody, and from what I understood, they're scary and they have a big scary dog, and I didn't want to, you know, and there's a dark brooding presence that knows that I'm there to try to help people. But my friends asked me if I would go through their home because their parents had died in the house. And I was like, okay. I went up from the attic all the way down to the basement and back, not a blip on my equipment, nothing. Yeah. But I started to walk across the street towards my childhood home, and the thing started going bing, ding, 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 ding. And it just was going full throttle when I got up towards the front of the house, and the equipment was absolutely going berserk. And, you know, could it be light street? I don't know. Nothing. Nowhere else.
Wiring, who knows?
Nowhere else was it happening, but only in front of this house, right? But one of the things that was weird was that I had this obsession with being a ventriloquist as a kid in that creepy house, and would sit in my room and practice with Edgar Bergen records. With my Charlie McCarthy doll. And I don't know where that came from, but the neighbor, my buddy's older brother, said, when I was a kid, there was a man that lived over there that would put on ventriloquist shows out on the front of the house. He would get the kids in the neighborhood and he would bring out his ventriloquist puppet. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, because I said to my sister the other day, I go, we were all affected by what was going on in that house one way or another. I mean, it, you know, and you can have all that stuff going on and have it not affect you in some way.
Well, I'm afraid we're running out of time. I hate it.
That's I know. We didn't even talk about UFOs or anything, but we'll do it another time.
We will have you back on soon. Definitely. No so worries. In the meantime, you're working on the book. It's not available yet. Yes.
No, and, I'm getting close to finishing this up. Of course, every time I think that some new thing happens or somebody else, you know, gives me more information. But yes, my first attempt at writing a book is almost done, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. It covers quite a few interesting stories, and not all of them are scary. I have had a lot of really amazing wonderful experiences, well, visitations from loved ones in my dream state. Some have been verified amazingly in weird ways. So there are some interesting positive things as well, which makes me say, yes, our consciousness continues on. Of course, I'm continuing with my studies, and I'm an artist, so artists don't retire. So now I'm just creating my own projects at this time.
Okay. Well, so if anybody wants to follow you, they should reach out on, I know you're on Facebook, or should they reach out anywhere else?
Well, you know, it's funny because when I retired in 2023 and I had my own LLC and everything, web pages, and I just said, okay, I'm done with this chapter. I shut everything down at this time. I am planning to rebuild a web page and, start to promote some of my other new interests that I'm doing, you know, but I have been busy. I've sculpted some bronze busts in recent times for a museum. And so I've been doing a few projects here and there at my leisure and choice. It's no longer big deadlines looming over me like they used to. So I'm picking and choosing, and I'm teaching. I'm involved with the local art school, getting involved with teaching some kids stuff. So keeping busy at this time, but I'm really enjoying the writing at this point, and I want to keep moving forward with that at this time, and we'll see where it goes.
Say hi to Kenny Biddle at the Ryan Institute. He teaches the skeptic class, he's a friend of the podcast. We're going to be seeing him at the Grafton Monster Festival in June. So
okay,
I think he speaks, and then we speak right after him. So it'll be good. I haven't seen him in the flesh in decades. So
The Ryan is wonderful. Anybody interested, check it out. They have some great courses there, and they're reasonably priced, you know, and you can get certificate, it just gives me goals. I like to have goals. So I'm trying to I have a few little certificates, but I want to take it as far as I can, so that what I really want to do is to try to help people in need by using my abilities and I'm wanting to learn to control and enhance my abilities. I know when I walk into a building that there's something there, but I want to be able to help people that are in need with those situations is what I'm hoping. That's my ultimate goal.
That's all you can hope for. That's exactly what we hope for. So, Erica, any last words here, and then I'll close it out.
No, I am looking forward to Barry's books and having him back on, because I want more of these stories. I mean, X didn't even get his fill this episode.
So I know we're gonna have you on and talk UFOs next time. And,
I know. Yeah, I know. Said I told you I saw my childhood friend when we were sitting out on his porch, and he and I had a UFO experience. We were like 10-year-old boys camping, and he remembered. I made him write this stuff down, by the way.
Document.
Exactly. So I interviewed all of my siblings when I was home, and wanted to get their side of the story. Yeah, I forgot to tell you some of the really great details about some of the things, but maybe we could get back at some of it.
We will get back shortly. I promise.
All right.
Maybe in the book it's fun. Maybe we can bring you back on and you can promote the book and we can talk that.
That'd be fantastic. Well, listen, I thoroughly enjoyed myself and I really love you guys and always enjoy listening to your show. And thank you so much for bringing me on.
You are very welcome, Barry. It was wonderful to have you.
Yeah, the honor was all ours.
We need an epic Mark exit. Mark, what are you going to say this time?
All right. I'm just going to say again, thank you, Patreon members, for keeping us afloat. Thank you, all our listeners. Like and share. That's Barry's a listener. So he's a fellow traveler. So we love that. We'll put the links to some of his movies in the show notes and you can watch some of his effects work. But most of all, when you're out there traveling, you've got places to go. You can go to the Rhine Institute. You can do it virtually. You can sit in on some classes. They have some free stuff, but maybe you get excited and want to take some classes, get a certification, jump in. If you want to share out what you've spoken about, that's what you do. Document, document, document. You never know where life's going to take you. And with all that said, and you do sign the deed on that new house and something weird starts happening, just say, Heidi, calm down. We know what we're doing. And we'll see you on the other side.
Don't miss the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. You'll find the Maytag appliances you need when you need them at a great price. Plus, when you buy two select laundry appliances, you'll get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop Maytag at Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.